Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
MFA or SCA, multi-factor authentication, secure customer authentication, clearly things that need to be borne in mind if, having had your two jabs and everything else has been sorted out, you're intending to actually start going to maybe some of the matches in the European Championships. Maybe you're just going to want to check out some performances and actually book your tickets online. Well, apparently 59% of us do have our hearts set on attending live events and so on as lockdown restrictions lift. And clearly one of the things about live events is you do need to have tickets for them, and you're probably going to book those tickets online. But beware, not just buyer beware, but beware of online fraud. And to talk us through this, we're delighted to welcome the Director of Digital at Nationwide, the wonderful James Smith. How are you, James?
Very good. How about yourself?
Very good indeed. Although I must admit, sometimes one tends to think that it is the bane of one's life, consistently ensuring that you have your mobile phone to hand, because every time you log into system, you have to actually sort of give a code and do all the rest of the bits and pieces. However, it's very important that we don't actually suffer financial losses simply because we want to ignore those aspects of confirming that it's really us who are purchasing the tickets.
That's quite right. I mean, the research we've done suggests it's as high as nearly 20% of people have noticed something either unusual on their account or had their contact details stolen. So when you think about that level of risk, making sure that you're really taking care when you're going through this online purchase is absolutely vital.
Now, one of the things about secure customer authentication is usually, certainly through my experience, that you will have various companies. Sometimes they'll actually sort of send you a text just to confirm that it is actually you. Sometimes they'll give you a one-off code to actually use and employ from that point of view. What is the situation with respect to Nationwide, and how is Nationwide effectively adopting these systems? I mean, have you moved into the case of wanting retina scans and thumbprints as yet?
So, well, I guess just before we get into that, so in terms of what secure customer authentication is then, so it's across the industry, and different banks and billing sites will be doing it in slightly different ways. But at its heart, it's all got the same concepts there, which is that it has to be two of three things: something that you have, something that you know, or something that you are, which starts to get into things like retina scans and facial recognition. At Nationwide, we have got five different ways of people being able to do that authentication. So when you now get to that checkout page, so when you're buying your tickets for the Euros or whether you're going to a festival and you put your card details in, and then it comes up with a question that says, yeah, we need to identify you. You can pick either to use a one-time code via SMS, one-time code via email, a landline telephone number, which will give you a code, or you can use the app or the card reader. So they're all viable ways which you can use if you're a Nationwide member.
It's interesting you mentioned landline there. I wonder how long we'll still have landlines for, but still, never mind. That's for another discussion. In terms of that whole aspect, though, I am conscious that hopefully most of us have moved on from the notion of you don't use password or your date of birth as your password for your things on that system. You need to obviously put it in a variety of places from that. Is this something which is really relatively easy, or is it a case of, well, just as actually when you're walking across the road, you look right and left and look right again, and you don't necessarily step out into ongoing traffic, you need to actually ensure that these precautions are put in place as good habits, basically?
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of thinking about it. I don't know, maybe go back far enough and people didn't do that, but then motor cars came along and people learned to do that very quickly. And I think that's exactly where we are right now. And I guess the internet's been around for 25 years, but over the last year especially, a lot more people will have started using it in anger, most of the time. And then just making sure that you get into those good habits, like looking both ways when you cross the road, making sure that your contact details are up to date, making sure that you are making use of all of the latest technology that your bank, billing society can offer. So say at Nationwide, if you use our app, it is by far and away the best way of managing that checkout experience, because we push the message straight into the app, you hit a button, you authenticate in the app, and then it all just goes through seamlessly. And that's how people need to be going forward, just to manage that risk.
It's interesting that the survey that Nationwide conducted suggested 69% of those questions said that they're worried about someone stealing their details to shop online. And that clearly is something where mean, the old name used to be identity theft from that point of view, but it is problematic. I mean, are there systems in place to ensure that, you know, other than obviously making sure that you are cautious about these things, that those things are prevented from happening?
Yeah, there's a variety of systems, and SCA is really just the latest one. Behind the scenes, there are then already quite sophisticated detection systems that sit there looking for things that are unusual. But yeah, it is really important as well, though, for people to also, you know, to be aware. I mean, you touched on some of these things before, but making sure that you've got your computers up to date, you've got antivirus and software installed, that you're using up-to-date browsers, and then just making sure that you're being really thoughtful about the sites that you're on. Yeah. And broadly, the old adage of, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is still a good thing to stand by.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're actually offered absolutely free antiviral checks and all the rest of bits and pieces. We think, I don't think so. It might look like a certain brand of company, but it's not the same at all from that perspective. They can be quite fiendish in terms of ways forward on that system. And of course, if you are actually booking tickets, if we return to that system, 74%, nearly three quarters of people actually book for a whole group. So you look at 2, 3, 4, maybe more tickets from that point of view, which clearly could be very costly if it's not a genuine site or a genuine sort of aspect that you're putting through.
Exactly that. I mean, at £65 a ticket, you're suddenly in for £200 or £300 of loss if you get it wrong. Now, yeah, most banks, bill sites will have then fraud protections in place, but this is where, you know, it's absolutely vital that you know, customers, in Nationwide's case, members work together so that they battle these frauds together, because as you say, they are fiendishly clever.
And Nationwide is the world's largest building society. Presumably nationwide.co.uk would be the place to go to find out further details about strong customer authentication.
Exactly that, Dax, yeah.
Excellent. So I've got to ask you, James, are you intending to actually sort of head off into any live events in the near future? Have you booked your tickets online? Or is it a case of, no, I'm director of digital at Nationwide. I do not have time to actually sort of engage in such frivolities.
I'm going to England USA rugby at Twickenham in June, and that's my big passion, and I'm really excited about that. It's the first live event I've been to for, well, yeah, what, 18 months, I guess. So yeah, I'm really excited about that.
And the USA, I think, actually just used to play rugby with pads, basically. So actually playing rugby with the USA is almost going to be a sea change in sorts of things. No, I mustn't say that. It could end up into all sorts of other problems from that. I'm sure we'll do very well. James Smith, head of digital or director of digital at Nationwide, many thanks indeed. And enjoy the rugby when you go and visit it later on this month.
Thank you, Alex. Bye-bye.
The Heart Within Me Burns, an awesome title, an awesome autobiography, and indeed the awesome tale of the fantastically wonderful Chrissy Rock, who's with us now. How are you, Chrissy?
I'm all right. How are you, Alex? Thanks for having us on your show.
Absolute delight. I mean, especially with the news that effectively you're around on tour in the not-too-distant future, covering such venues as Hartlepool and more from that point of view. It's great.
I know.
However, from Benidorm to Hartlepool, that's a sequel, obviously, to the autobiography from that point of view, clearly.
Oh, thank you.
But one of the serious points about this particular feature is you have also been, sadly, the victim of online scamming for people who have actually been looking to access details from that. So share with us, Chrissy, what's the challenge been?
Well, what happened to me, somebody set up a false Facebook page. Everything that looked genuine, I couldn't even get on my own Facebook for it. And then my manager got these phone calls from clubs all around the country and gone, we've paid for Chrissy Rock to appear here. She hasn't turned up. We've paid X, Y, Z amount. And it was like, what? We knew nothing about it. So these people were saying, yeah, we'll get Chrissy Rock for you, but you have to pay the money up front. Nobody does that, you know. Yeah. So you just, if it's what we call a no pickup, you perform in the venue. And once you performed in the venue, then the club will send the money to the agent, not you send it to some. It's afterwards that they send it. You know what I mean? You can't send it if you haven't been there.
Now, that's just one example, of course, but it seems that in this recent research by Lloyds Bank, research collected by Semrush, the number of people seeking help for family and friends who've been victims of online scams has actually risen by a quarter between between the pandemic, basically, April 2020 through to April 2021. And I think it is important to ensure that, okay, not everybody in the internet world is going to scam you, but these are worrying things, Chrissy. These are things which certainly for vulnerable people and not just people who would be classified as vulnerable, they could obviously, as you've just said, be tricked by fraudsters and so on.
Oh, a parcel. We've got a parcel here for you. But if you send us $2.99, send it back. I don't want it. I haven't even ordered a parcel. But how many are waiting and click? Yeah. Innocently click. And that's what's horrible. That these scams look so genuine, look so real, and are so heartless in the devastation they leave behind. And also, these people don't want to say anything because they feel stupid. They feel, you know, oh, what have I done here? Embarrassed. But the tips are always use your credit card. Me personally, I don't do nothing now. I won't order anything. You know, if it's not in the shop and I can't get it and see it, I don't get it at all. Any messages I have that I don't know, private or whatever, I don't answer. Any numbers I don't recognise, I don't answer. So what we have to do now, because of this uprise, is take a step back and think before we act. You know, think, don't do a bank transfer unless you know it's... Go to your bank and say, have you asked me to do a bank transfer? Get somebody who can go and do that for you. Someone you know, someone you trust. Use your card. And also, always think of the red flag. Think, this is too good to be true. This is, you know, it's out there and it's blatant and they get more and more. So as I said, Lloyds Bank have set up web pages to help people. And they've got together with Semrush, research specialists that help this. It has to stop. And the only way it has to stop, sadly, is if we all decide to go. I'm not buying nothing. I'm not answering any text. I'm not sending anything.
Which is absolutely true. And again, those top three tips, but your bank will never, ever ask you to move money from your account. No. And if someone asks you to do this, just hang up. And again, particularly if it's a telephone call, et cetera, they might appear genuine. But that, of course, is the worst thing to have for you. Again, only pay by card, buy online, pay by card. Don't look to go into bank transfer, et cetera. And don't click on any link or text that actually you're not expecting. Again, it seems so easy. But as you said, Chrissy, one of the challenges with this is sometimes there's a deviousness that actually is around this that actually sort of does sort of carry with it. And I think everybody who's actually using the online system these days will have been faced with that notion of, oh, it sounds as though it's come from my boss, or it's come from somebody that I actually know, or it's come from Chrissy Rock, or it must be genuine. Mm-hmm. No, you know, it needs to actually... So you need to
and it's not just the elderly ones, it's the young ones, because the young ones, everything's online, they've got to have this brand, they've got to have that brand, and everything's got to be instant. So they have to be aware as well, because they're like living the dream, you know, wanting this like yesterday. So they've got to be aware of it as well, because it's not just... elderly people, you know, it's young ones as well, it's single parents, you know.
Well, hopefully we've raised that message. Of course, I would go back to chrissyrock.co.uk. I mean, fingers crossed, if we're out of the pandemic, or at least we're into various other bits and pieces, this is a really exciting tour. It kicks off on September the 1st at Whitley Bay. I mentioned Hartlepool, Darlington, Worcester, Belfast, Liverpool. That's going to be a good return to the hometown, I would have thought, isn't it?
Probably be bricked.
Great stuff. And Chester, of course, on the 11th of September, Manchester the 15th, Blackpool 16th. You've got New Brighton, you've got Milford Haven, Scunthorpe, Gainsborough, all sorts of things. You can find the details, obviously, on chrissyrock.co.uk. Are you looking forward to the tour, Chrissy?
I am looking forward to the tour. And I'm going to be doing Panto for 2 weeks. And then I'm going off from January for 6 months with Menopause the Musical 2. So I'm looking forward to that. So I don't know how I've got through the pandemic, but the only thing that got me through was everybody's in the same boat. Mm. We can't moan. And there's some people...
Apart from our Prime Minister, but we won't talk about him because that's another issue entirely. So let's just step away from it. Apart from the Prime Minister, he seems to be in a different boat entirely, but never mind. On that, I have to mention, of course, that your autobiography, which is still available, presumably The Heart Within Me Burns, nothing to do with heartburn, but The Heart Within You Burns. Passion. Yeah. Well, very good. That's out there. Chrissy, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self. Just a reminder, in terms of online scams, where would you recommend people should go? Should they go to the Lloyds Bank website to actually find out details?
I would go to Lloyds Bank, because Lloyds Bank, with the SEMrush, is being more involved, do you know what I mean? And it's just a bank that's made it more aware and thought, hang on a minute, what's going on here? So they've brought it to the forefront.
Yeah.
And SEMrush is helping, you know, the research specialists, and they're helping to draw a line for it and helping people who have been scammed.
Well, Chrissy, it's been fantastic to connect with you, with your good self. Any likelihood of more Benidorm as well in the future? Or is that unsure?
Well, only the place if it was allowed to go back. But the programme has finished now.
It may be finished in time, Chrissy, but in people's hearts, it'll always have a place. That's the important thing.
I feel like the man fell at Fawlty Towers. I thought there was other people in it, and they go, oh.
No, absolutely not. It's absolutely awesome. And of course, lots of other great things are occurring. Chrissy, it's been fantastic sharing some thoughts with your good self. Actually, I'm going to throw this question at you. Are you Everton, Tranmere or Liverpool or neither?
I love rugby.
Well, there you go. You see, that's it. The diplomatic the diplomatic response.
Intelligence Rugby League.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Chrissy, two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
A lovely day Zooming, and I hope that if it just saves one person from thinking before they press that send button, and, you know, if it only one person, but I hope a lot of people out there will think before they jump in.
Absolutely.
Doing anything.
So our final question to your good self, Chrissy, is will you be kind enough to come back in the not-too-distant future? Will you return to the programme?
Well, if they've done another programme of Benidorm and they asked me back, obviously I can't just turn off.
I was actually talking about the midweek drive, Chrissy. I was talking about this show. Will you be kind enough to actually come back and join this one?
See, I had a senior moment there.
Sorry.
I'm going back anytime, love.
Wonderful. Chrissy Rock, we salute you. Take care and all the very best.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Had a blonde day.
Is it going to be the straw that finally breaks the NHS's back? Well, hopefully not, but it does seem to be a case that despite the need to obviously keep a thriving and healthy NHS in place, it's facing mass employee exodus, with about 45% of doctors, nurses and allied healthcare professionals now considering leaving the NHS, which is up by a third compared to the result of a recent survey which was taken in November 2020. Junior doctors most likely to consider leaving, closely followed by 55% of nurses, all research carried out by Visiba Care. And we're therefore delighted to welcome the UK country manager of Visiba Care, or Visiba Care, either pronunciation presumably, Tina Marshall. How are you?
Hello there, Alex. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Is it Visiba or Visiba?
It's Visiba Care.
Visiba, excellent.
It's Swedish, but thank you.
That's okay. Well, in terms of this survey, though, it really is quite shocking in terms of, and understandable at the same time, that enough is enough already. Human beings can only take so much when they're in the care professions, when they're in any of the social professions, before they say, that's it, I need to get my work-life balance sorted out.
I mean, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's key that we recognize and remember that our healthcare professionals are people, the same as, you know, as you and I. They have been living through COVID for the last year in the same way, probably more so, and they haven't stopped. They haven't stopped delivering and being there for us. And it is a shame to see these numbers that was conducted by CensusWide on behalf of Visiba Care. But I also want to take us to one of the positive sets of the numbers, which was that even though this is happening, 77% of those have said that they would change their mind if there were more options for remote working. Mm. So being able to deliver care differently, I think, is where we need to go right now.
And that's a really interesting point, because I know within the educational sector, there are colleagues who actually loathe and detest remote working with a vengeance and are considering leaving because of that. But there are others who actually have embraced it and actually found it a much more positive way and a proactive way of maintaining a work-life balance. Having said that, given that the point of care is very much to the fore here, is it feasible that actually you can deal with patient queries and questions just as effectively in a remote format as obviously that face-to-face in-person care that people were so used to?
Absolutely. And the reason why is because not every, and this isn't for every single patient, and this isn't for every single condition, but there will be touch points within most patients and a lot of conditions that can be done digitally. And that could be done via messaging or via video or sending forms in. And all of those elements will actually help free up time. So when we're looking at delivering care and we're looking at patient pathways, what we need to do is look at something that's clinically led and patient centric. So what I mean by that is that our clinicians, they know their patients, they spend time with their patients. Our clinicians then need to choose which points in that patient pathway should they see a patient for a physical appointment for that 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 10 minutes even, and which part of it should it be for digitally? And that can be done. And we're talking, you know, I mean, the easy ones are sick notes, sick notes and repeat prescriptions. Those are the easy ones. Also, if a patient is sending in information about cold and flu, does that always have to be dealt with by a GP? I'm not so sure. And if you're looking at secondary care, I mean, do you always receive a physical examination every single appointment that you have with a healthcare professional? That's the question I would ask. Mm.
So is it more a case of the old classic mantra, work smarter, not harder, that actually sort of this line of actually having to be at the front line, working through those sort of the systems that we talked about, which results in, let's face it, the resignation of Jenny McGee, the nurse who actually cared for our Prime Minister during his time in hospital. Is it a case of if you can get that balance right, then actually you're going to at least get people to rethink their position on that's it, I've had enough, I'm out of here?
Absolutely. I mean, our data shows actually that if you're looking at, so in healthcare, we look at DNA rates, which are did not attend. And if you look at the rates that you would have for physical appointments, which in secondary care could be anywhere from 15 to 20%, and in primary care around 7 or 8%, evidence actually shows that you can reduce those to 2 to 3%. So patients are much happier. Patients are much happier. And of course, clinicians will be as well. Nobody wants clinicians to be unhappy. We know that they've worked so hard and so tirelessly. But also as patients, I think we have a responsibility to help them change the way of working. You know, you're not going to be able to make a huge difference if you simply slip in a digital tool in the same analog pathway. You need to change the pathway, and that will make the change of care.
In the same way as presumably higher education and education in general has had to use blended learning as a phenomenon, presumably blended approaches or hybrid approaches will be the way to go. Looking at that, Tina, just in terms of the actual sort of numbers here, 92% of those surveyed actually agreed that actually that working remotely from home gave them much greater flexibility, which is a very high number. But the slight sort of caveat is that over a third also said they'd be concerned with technical issues. Is that a circle that still needs to be squared in terms of if you don't have broadband, you've got a problem?
If I'm honest, yes, I think in our country, we can do an awful lot with our broadband. However, we do have to remember that we do also have good mobile networks too. So if you have tech that works on mobiles as well as via the web and via the internet, then again, you have a mixture. So I would say for all of these things, it's never going to work for everybody, and it shouldn't work for everybody. But as we say, we need to have the blended approach so that it can work most effectively where it is needed, and it can fit into the pathways like that.
It's going to be an ongoing conversation, I've no doubt. But where can people actually find out more about the survey and indeed Vizeba Care, Tina?
Absolutely. So please feel free to get in touch on our website, vizebacare.com. You'll just be able to drop a chat through to us then.
Tina Marshall, UK Country Manager for Vizeba Care. Huge thanks. Stay well, stay healthy.
Thank you so much, Alex.
It's back. What's back, you say? Fiberfest is back. And for those of you who remember one of the highlights, of course, of 2020, no, not the pandemic, but the joy of this wonderful way of supporting local businesses and indeed celebrating the local businesses of the UK. We're delighted to actually welcome the founder of Totally Locally, who, of course, are behind Fiberfest. That's the wonderful Chris Sands. How are you, Chris?
I'm very well, thank you. Nice to meet you again.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's just wondrous in so many ways. And this particular element, which is really a phenomenal success, also has a lot to thank the fine folk from Visa. Indeed, from Visa, we've actually got the wonderful Dominic White with us as well. How are you, Dominic?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. Good to see you. You've got your camera on, so I'll switch my camera on. There we are. We can all see each other. It's wonderful. Excellent. It's like radio Thanks, with Alex. Pictures or whatever. But still, great,
it's,
great
it's
stuff.
Too confusing. I can't tell. Is it radio or TV or what, you know?
Well, we'll carry on. Chris, let's turn to you initially. Totally Locally, just give us, again, a reminder of why you set it up and how it's proving to be really important in terms of local economies and so on.
I did it for my local area, really, which is Calderdale in West Yorkshire, just 10 years ago now. And it just proved really successful straight away. Lots of other towns and areas asked for me to do it with them as a job. And then I just decided I would give it away for free and see what happens. And it's spread and spread and spread. And yeah, it's across the world. And Fiberfest is just a little part of that, really. But Fiberfest is the bit that's really captured the imagination. And it's so easy, I suppose, and a simple message.
Well, so, yeah. Often the ideas, best ideas come from Yorkshire. Sorry, Lincolnshire, but that's just a case in point. It is God's own county. Now, you've teamed up, as we said, with Visa for this, for, of course, the wonderful Fiberfest. Let's turn back to Dom. Just share with us how, for a simple £5, and indeed Fiberfest, etc., this can really have a massive impact in terms of local businesses as well.
Yeah, Alex, I think it's that consciousness and just thinking about where you shop and what that means for the local community. And there's a place for all of the different retailers that we use online and in person. But when you shop locally, out of that fiver, something like £1.90 stays in the local community. So it comes back into local employment, into the local supply chains, people fitting out shops, that sort of thing. So I think there's something really powerful that we can all do just with that, a little diverting a little bit of our spend into our local community.
And inevitably, given the sort of situation that we've been in with respect to the pandemic, it's perhaps no surprise that 61% of small businesses are optimistic that people who are going on staycations will actually shop with them in the summer.
Yeah, I think that's the key message. We're doing staycations like everybody else is. We lived out of London. We were up in Yorkshire recently. We were to Scotland. We're going to Wales in July. Everybody, all of us are doing that sort of thing. I think if we consciously go to the pub, have that pint in the local pub, if you're self-catering, have a look at some of the independent grocery stores, the butchers, and find some of the great local produce and local gift stores and things like that. Take something home with you. Chris, you were saying to me about how when you go on holidays to Greece or something, you want the experience, you want to bring something back with you. Why can't we do that within the UK?
A souvenir from a staycation. And indeed, just turning to Chris, clearly this, it is a festival. It runs from the 12th of June through to the 26th of June. So what better way to actually combine your sort of holidays with, of course, the Fiberfest? Thousands of local businesses are actually hosting £5 special offers. Would you just like to talk us through some of the highlights? Or is it a case of no, you should go to fiberfest.co.uk and find them all there?
Well, you can do both if you want. There's so many different things happening. Like I said, there's 108 towns taking part this time across. And I did find that the most on the north coast of Scotland, there's Nairn, and on the right on the southern tip, there's Truro. So we've covered the whole country, really. One of my favourites we've actually seen, and crazy as it sounds, is we couldn't believe it, was there's a bus museum on the Isle of Wight, and they're selling vintage bus seats for £5. The actual physical vintage bus seats. So that's got to be up there as one of the best ones so far. Last year we had someone was doing axe throwing lessons. So there's so many things. So, you know, you go right from £5 lunch deal to, and, you know, a pint and a pie or whatever, right through to vintage bus seats, all for £5. It's quite extraordinary. And the ingenuity of people is amazing.
Yeah. Certainly the axe throwing scenario is something which perhaps the G7 people should actually be considering. It's just another way of burying the hatchet. But, you know, that's something that's above my pay grade. Back to yourself, Dom, in terms of obviously this impact of community benefits. I mean, 57% of local businesses say that £5 purchase from every staycationer in their community would actually help their businesses stay open. And that is fairly critical because, you know, although there's been a kind of COVID boost over the last 12 to 14 months, etc., it's important that that's maintained.
Yeah. We did some research, and during the first lockdown, a lot of people started shopping locally, and we looked again, and we're seeing that 90%, 9 out of 10 people are saying they're still continuing to support local businesses wherever they can. So I think the other thing that was interesting is what we've seen in the UK is that businesses that are able to keep going are actually able to thrive through this time. So we've been trying to work with groups like Chris's to help small businesses get online as well. Through the times when they can't trade face-to-face. And if they've been able to keep going, they've actually been able to thrive and in some cases even have better performance than before the pandemic.
Chris, fiberfest.co.uk, is that the best place to actually go to find out further details about what we've been chatting about?
It is, yeah. And in your area, there's Brig Worksop and Bolsover have been really active. And I've just been looking, actually, when you're asking for local ones, the Rabbit Hole Bookshop, which we know really well. And, you know, they're doing £5 children's books. So you can see it's just this little, you know, it's just an enticement, really. You could go in and discover these new places or old places that you'd maybe forgotten about, or just the fact that you go there all the time. It doesn't really matter. It's just all about that. Yeah, so fiberfest.co.uk, hashtag fiberfest on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
And I've got to ask the question, Dominic. I mean, Visa, surely there's got to be a future for businesses starting up axe throwing campaigns. I mean, that doesn't mean be safe, obviously, but, you know, it's got to happen, hasn't it?
I think taking all the necessary precautions, Alex, we'd fully support axe throwing businesses wherever they are.
It's been awesome, gentlemen, doing... I mean, we must do this more than just annually. I mean, I can't believe it's a year since we last actually spoke and talked about Fiberfest, but it is back, and we certainly celebrate that. Chris Sands, the founder of Totally Locally, of course, very much behind Fiberfest, and likewise from Visa, Dominic White, huge thanks. And if you don't go for your buses, if you don't go for your other bits and pieces, well, as I say, the axe throwing is always an option. Take care.
Thank you, Alex.
Great, Alex. Thank you so much.
Bracky builds a new den. Some interesting words that actually form the focus of the title of a new free book, which is designed to help children make sense of the world around them when a parent or carer experiences a serious injury. And to talk us through this particular aspect, we're delighted to welcome two wonderful folk. First of all, child psychotherapist extraordinaire and indeed counsellor who has also supported Fletcher's serious injury in the creation of Bracky Builds a New Den. That, of course, is Charlotte Beaumont. How are you, Charlotte?
Hi. Okay, thank you.
Excellent. And indeed from Fletcher's serious injury, a wonderful Adrian Denson. How are you, Adrian?
Hi, Alex. I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Charlotte, let's come to you first. Share with us the whole notion of why Bracky Builds a New Den was so important, especially when it comes to, you know, a shocking statistic that 2.5 million children in the UK do experience mental health complications, including post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. I mean, having a resource out there that children can turn to, and certainly families as well, where they can help to make sense of what's happened in that situation when parental illness or injury has suddenly occurred, can be a really useful tool. And also to explore their own situation from different angles using that storybook, it can be a very healing thing.
And Adrian, from the point of view of your role as Chief Legal Officer at Fletcher's Serious Injury, I mean, it goes without saying that anybody who has a serious injury is a life-changing experience. And in this particular instance, how children cope with their parent or carer actually suffering that particular thing can cause an awful lot of stress, I would have thought.
Yeah, over the years, we've helped so many people who've suffered serious injury, and it isn't just the individual that we are supporting through their rehabilitation and their recovery. What you find, in every single case, there is a significant impact upon the wider family. And a particularly heartbreaking aspect of that is when you see that there are children involved, and the impact upon the children can often be very, very serious indeed, from an emotional and psychological level, but also a very practical level as well. They might need to change schools because they've had to change home. They may see much less now of their parent or carer than they saw previously. Certainly the dynamic, the relationship with that person might change. They might even become part-time carers. You know, they have to grow up so much quicker very often in these situations. So we commissioned the research, and I must admit, I was surprised. We knew that the number would be high, but over 2.5 million children are thought to experience mental health complications for those reasons, when their parents or carer has been involved in serious injury. And that's why we decided to develop the book, Bracky Builds a New Den, to help to support children and families in a way that we don't think is currently being done elsewhere.
Charlotte, as human beings, we're creatures who like narratives. We like stories. Is it, from your own perspective as a psychotherapist, something that's important that somehow seeing this these traumas being addressed in a way which is, as we said at the start, age appropriate, can actually help with the healing process, or at least help the children begin to come to terms with their own position in the whole scheme of things?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important to be able to process something like that and to make sense, rather than sat with lots of uncertainty and gaps within that narrative.
And Adrian, returning to yourself, we mentioned post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, etc., shock, anxiety, anger, outburst, insomnia, and so on. You said yourself you were surprised by the kind of impact on this side of things. Is this something which, again, can actually work through that? I mean, it's worthwhile actually maybe going through the narrative of Bracky Builds a New Den. Of course, it's the tale of a happy dinosaur whose life is turned upside down when their father suffers a serious injury. Share with us again what sort of things you went through, obviously, that other than sort of bringing on board wonderful folk like Charlotte in terms of constructing this particular text.
Yeah, excuse me. I'll hand over to Charlotte in a moment because she's, she'll be able to talk more authoritatively on some of those aspects. But what we wanted the book to convey is how everything changes in a moment when this happens. And we see this for children so much. And this is what happens with Bracky. He has a great life. He's happy. He's secure. He's loved and feels safe. And then all of that changes when the injury, and it's to his daddy in the book that it happens to, and it's from there that everything changes. And emotionally and practically, lots of changes occur in that situation. And we wanted to convey all of that in the book. And, and Charlotte was sort of critical to ensuring that we put all of that in there.
Very much addressing the whole notion of a real issue approached in a sensitive and empathetic way. And that empathy is something which I think is vital. Charlotte, out of interest, dinosaurs as opposed to space people, as opposed to aliens, what was the focus on dinosaurs?
I think just looking at what might be applicable and appropriate for children to latch onto and for that age group, dinosaurs might be something that they could gravitate towards.
I wasn't sure whether you'd actually gone deep into the notion of the dinosaur brain, the mindset, and actually, yes, it was all there. Or simply it was a case of, well, Steven Spielberg's quite influential, let's do a dinosaur thing. Never mind. Yes, Adrian.
I read the book to my five-year-old or with him last night. and the fact that it's dinosaurs that are in there just immediately drew him to it. And he really thoroughly enjoyed it. And clearly the book isn't directed It's primarily directed at families and children who have been impacted by serious injury, but I really enjoyed seeing my five-year-old last night with a hard copy of the book, getting a lot out of it himself and actually enjoying it. And I think the dinosaurs really helped with that.
And that, presumably, Charlotte, is something which is important, that actually people will read the book with the 5 to 8 year olds, they'll work through that process. And again, they share it, so they come to terms and understand it through that connection.
Yeah, I think having that connection is a really important part of that. And also when reading through it, learning that all of those emotions are completely understandable to have occurred throughout that process.
Adrian, just points the listener in the direction of where they should actually go to find out more about Fletcher's serious injury, or indeed the Bracky dinosaur adventure.
So the book is available as an ebook to download for free from the fletcherssolicitors.co.uk website. So it's available there now if you go to the website. We have hard copies of the book as well that we will be circulating to families and to schools and health workers and charities so that they can have it as a hard copy resource. But yeah, the free download is available as an ebook from fletchersolicitors.co.uk.
And Charlotte, would you envisage more adventures for Bracky after he builds a new den? Would he actually build another den? Are there sequels in mind, or is it a case of no? One is enough.
Who knows?
Interesting answer there. Keeping us enigmatic as ever. Very, very nice. Charlotte Beaumont, child psychotherapist and counsellor. And of course, Adrian Denson, Chief Legal Officer for Fletcher's Serious Injury. Many thanks indeed. And may your personal guardian, Bracky, always watch over you.
Ah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I think it was the Hollies who had a hit back in the day with "Sometimes All I Need Is the Air That I Breathe," and that's particularly apt and relevant with respect to the shocking fact that over 94% of parents are still underestimating the number of deaths that are actually caused by air pollution in the United Kingdom each year, with over a quarter of parents effectively thinking car manufacturers are being honest about how much damage their vehicles do to their environment. So a couple of combining facts there. Leading into this next particular piece, for which we're delighted to actually welcome one of the lawyers from My Diesel Claim to the fore, and that's Pete Gallagher. Pete, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you know, we look back historically and we say, oh, well, we don't have smog these days. You don't have those pea super fogs that were based in London. We don't actually see any major pollutions around. We're in a very healthy environment. That would seem to be far from the truth.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the consequences of modern day emissions cheating can feel largely invisible because you don't get those pea supers. However, diesel engines are still throwing out increased levels of nitrogen dioxide, which can cause harm to children, adults and the environment as well.
Now, this particular survey that was carried out again reveals a number of interesting facts, but perhaps the most pertinent is how air pollution can really have an adverse effect upon children and their health, and indeed in some instances tragically causing death from that point of view. Would you like to just talk us through some of the findings of this particular research and indeed its impact, which again many folk might have been taken aback by, really?
Absolutely. And I think you were referring there to the tragic death of 9-year-old Ella Odu Kisi Debra last year, who was ruled by a coroner to have died partly as a consequence of the effects of this kind of pollution. You know, and some of the alarming figures we've seen, as you've referred to, are the sheer number of parents who underestimate the number of deaths caused by air pollution, which, as we've already addressed, is because it's effectively a silent killer. But, you know, that's matched by the fact that only a quarter of parents surveyed think that car manufacturers are in fact being honest about how much damage their vehicles do to the environment, which brings us on to the issue we face here. You know, that the manufacturers are producing these vehicles, which we say contain defeat devices, which are designed to stop tests which detect what their true emissions really are. So it's absolutely key that we bring these kinds of claims to stop the manufacturers from producing vehicles which don't meet emission standards.
Now, clearly there was the scandal of catalytic converters in the Volkswagen group a few years ago, which certainly had initial impacts in terms of that particular make. But it would seem that, again, they haven't learned, the car manufacturers in general have not learned with respect to obviously the issues that were raised there, and that clearly we still have problems with this.
Yes, and it's absolutely vital to make sure that they in fact do produce green vehicles which comply with the applicable standards. I mean, again, a majority of the parents surveyed, so they consider the environment when making purchases of vehicles, and they are absolutely right and entitled to do so. And so it's really important that when they buy those vehicles, they know they're buying something that does what it says on the tin.
There are a number of folk who might be listening to this, Pete, who would possibly turn around and say, ah, yes, well, we were all told a few years ago to actually buy diesel because that was a lot better for the environment, etc. And look how that turned out. Do you think that actually the public have had their trust sorely tested when it comes to actually what is the case and what issues are actually out there?
Absolutely. And again, you know, this just really underlines why these kinds of legal cases against the car manufacturers are absolutely vital at making sure that public trust is restored in the vehicles that are available to buy. Mm-hmm. Emission standards are there for a reason. They're there to protect individuals and they're there to protect the environment. And it's absolutely key that manufacturers don't get away with producing vehicles that produce more harmful emissions than they let on.
Talk us through what a defeat device actually is. We mentioned it earlier. We talked about how cars should be fitted with them and so on. But how can the defeat device actually bring us victory in the battle against air pollution?
It's actually the other way around. So a defeat device is what allows a vehicle to escape environmental standards. It's typically a piece of software that detects when the vehicle's engine is being tested by the authorities or another party. And when it detects that it's being tested, it alters the operation of the engine so that the usual emissions level of the vehicle are changed and appear to be compliant. However, in everyday usage, the defeat device is switched off and the car is able to emit more harmful chemicals.
And you know, we understand that clearly older vehicles, they have their MOTs, they get their systems checked and so on. So again, that's one sort of scenario. But how can you actually tell if your car is actually fitted with a defeat device?
Well, unfortunately, it's difficult for any individual to actually detect a defeat device on their own. These vehicles have been subject to detailed testing by academic institutions who have sort of blown the whistle by publishing their results. And that's what's allowing us to bring these claims, is that we have some evidence that various different manufacturers have been incorporating those defeat devices in their car. So that means that if you own a diesel engine vehicle that you purchased during or after 2009, you can visit mydieselclaims.com and see if you're eligible to bring a claim yourself.
Bath, Birmingham, London, of course, are all connected with already or are beginning to introduce clean air zones. Will that actually help, or is it a case of, well, there are only patches, we need to actually roll this out across the country?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not an environmental scientist, but in my view, those kinds of low emission zones are crucial. Of course, it's just been recently expanded in London as well, which is where I live. And those kinds of low emission zones are going to make it more difficult in any event for older diesel engine cars and also older petrol engine cars, which do emit more chemicals, to operate.
And in terms of my diesel claim, for people who are actually keen to find out some further information about the issues relating to this, and maybe it's just considering whether or not they should consider sort of bringing in the professionals to actually talk about ways to address this issue, where would you point them?
I would absolutely point them to go to mydieselclaims.com, which contains some further information and also allows them to see if they may be eligible to claim. I do think it's really important that owners of these kinds of diesel engine cars do take this kind of action and see if they can sign up to claim, because it's only by holding the manufacturers to account that we'll actually succeed in taking action to make sure that we have green vehicles on our roads.
Which was pretty much coming around to my closing questions, basically. I mean, given that air pollution is set to cause between 36,000 and 40,000 premature deaths every year, £20 billion is the additional cost to healthcare every year due to air pollution. Do you think things are getting better, or do they need to get worse before they get better? What's the prognosis from your own point of view?
I very much hope that things are going to get better. The government has made commitments to reducing carbon emissions across the board. Manufacturers like Jaguar Land Rover are committing, even in luxury vehicles, to produce electric vehicles by, I believe it's 2030 or 2035. So I do think we are moving in the right direction.
Pete Gallagher from Mysl Diesel Claim, many thanks indeed, and be well and be safe.
Thanks, Alex.
Let's continue in our own unique, magical way with, of course, that guru of wellness, well-being, and in particular, nutritional supplements, with, of course, PharmaNord to the fore. Of course, the man behind Dennis the Chemist, it is indeed Dennis the Chemist. How are you, Dennis?
Mighty fine, thank you. Mighty fine. And you mentioned the name PharmaNord. This is the Danish company that completely altered my life nearly 30 years ago when I came across their range. There's nearly 40 of them of health products, and they're all made in Denmark to pharmaceutical standards. And I started selling those products nearly 30 years ago, and I had such good results in helping people maintain good health that on other programs I've been doing on radio and television over the years, besides your good health, they contacted me and said, we'd like to send you to meetings all over the world so you can learn more and more about health and health products. And so over the 30 years, it's been great. I've been to Boston, Germany, Italy, London, Los Angeles, Prague, Belgium, Sweden, Seville, Bologna, New York. I've even been to Lapland, to see a berry from Mongolia and Tibet with a special oil in this berry, which is for dry mouth and dry eyes and dry skin. And after the menopause, dryness. And so PharmaNord, in a way, took over my life in a nice sense. And so what I'm just going to chat about today, Daily Mail, Friday, June the 11th, 2021, a headline, Fat But Fit? And an amazing sort of breakthrough, because people think the opposite to what this is telling us. Can you be fat but fit? And then it says, it is a misleading myth. Misleading myth to think that if you're fat, you can be fit. Many people in my pharmacy, I've been here 55 years. I came when I was 25 and I'm 80. So I've done 5 million prescriptions. I've spoken to literally hundreds of thousands of people giving advice in the shop, on emails, by letter, on the radio, on TV. And you do hear people saying, although I'm fat, I'm very fit. But it says here, it's a misleading myth. And I'll just read by Sean Wooler, the health correspondent in the Mail, Friday, June the 11th, 2021. It does say, it is not possible to be fat but fit. And doctors should stop using the misleading phrase. Obese patients were still more likely to suffer life-threatening conditions, even if they had normal blood pressure, normal blood sugar, and normal cholesterol. Researchers from the University of Glasgow, they tracked, and it wasn't a small number, say 100 people. It was actually, I can't believe the number. They tracked, what wonderful work, 381,000 people over an average period of 11 years. What meticulous work they did, tracking 381,000 people over 11 years. And those amongst these people who were so-called metabolically healthy but obese, so their blood pressure and cholesterol and different things they were looking at were sort of, the numbers were healthy, but because they were obese, the experts found that these people who thought they were metabolically healthy, these people who were obese, were 22% more likely to die than those of a normal weight. They were 18% more likely to have a heart attack or stroke. 76% more likely to develop heart failure, and four times more likely to get type 2 diabetes. And their odds of the respiratory disease was 28% higher. And the likelihood of that terrible condition, which isn't just in smokers, we're learning here, it's if you're obese, it can lead to chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Used to be called emphysema. And now, instead of saying chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, where you chronically, your liver, your lungs aren't working properly and you can't breathe properly. If you are misleading with this myth of fat but fit, you're 19% greater to get COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So the lead study, Dr. Frederick Ho, said people with metabolically healthy obesity, where their numbers seem to be okay, and they say, yeah, all my numbers are fine. Yeah, I am obese, but I'm okay. My numbers are okay. This lead doctor, Dr. Frederick Ho, says people with this idea are not healthy, as they are at a higher risk of heart attacks and strokes, heart failure, respiratory disease, compared with people without obesity who've got normal numbers. Weight management could be beneficial to all people with obesity, irrespective of whatever numbers you're looking at, sugar levels, cholesterol levels. We can't get away with being overweight, and then leads to the worst level, obesity. The team said that this idea should be avoided in clinical medicine, as it is misleading, and different strategies for defining risk should be explored. Obesity typically leads to all metabolic problems, characterized by high blood sugar, raised blood pressure, and insulin resistance. That's where your pancreas makes insulin, but it can't handle the sugar. It can't fit the sugar into the receptors waiting to receive the sugar. Because all your trillions and trillions of receptors designed to receive some sugar for energy, they will, if you're overweight, obese, the actual receptor gets squashed by the fat. And even if the insulin is bringing the right amount of sugar to the receptor, it can't put it in the receptor because of the obesity, because of the fat, because of the fat. These effects are not universal, and between 3 and 22% of the population are thought to have this situation. Blood pressure, blood fat, bad cholesterol, good cholesterol, blood sugar, inflammation. So this is amazing. This is amazing. And females are more prone to the damage, even if they think they're unhealthily obese, but their numbers seem to be all right. It's not all right, because in the coming years, these people are going to become ill. And they were more likely to be female and from a Black or a minority ethnic background. And the findings were published in the well-known journal called Diabetologia, the Journal of the European Association for the Study of Diabetes. So this is amazing. It's really ticking all the boxes that nobody can get away with being fat. Even if you think you're fit and your numbers seem to be right. So let's mention Pharmanaud products. I can go immediately to a wonderful result when Pharmanaud sent me to fly to Sweden 7 years ago to hear the results of a trial just using two of the Pharmanaud products. One was called, and I've mentioned it many times, it's a tablet, cost 10p, 10 pence. It's the world's rarest mineral, and many countries, including Great Britain, we have one of the lowest levels of the world's rarest mineral. We have one of the lowest levels in the soil, so it can't get in our food or our drinking water. Anything that grows in the ground can't get much selenium, that's the name. And the Pharmanaud product is called Bio Seleno Precise. It gives you the precise amount of selenium you need to top up the lousy levels that the British soil is giving our food. The lousy levels that the British soil is giving our food that grows in the food, or even a cow if you're not vegan, vegetarian, then if you eat a steak, the cow is made of grass. All it's eating is grass. And if the grass hasn't got any selenium, the meat hasn't got any selenium. And the tomatoes and any lettuce, cabbage, cauliflower, celery, anything growing in British soil has very low selenium. And you need selenium in your body to make 25 pathways. So in this trial in Sweden that I went to hear the result, they were giving a 10-penny tablet of selenium. And they were also giving this other substance called Q10. You make it in your liver. There is some found in food, sardines, peanuts, but most of your Q10, this substance, which gives you your energy, and most of it is made in our liver. And as we pass 20, our liver makes less. And as we get to 40, amazingly, our levels have dropped to a two-year-old level. And when we get to 80, I myself, Dennis Gore, I am 80. I'm 10 years off 90. And I've been taking Q10 since I was 57. That's why I'm not old, I'm young, because keep Q10 keeps you young. That's the nice noise of my desk. That thumping is my six-pack, because when you take Q10, it even stops you losing muscle. So in this trial in Sweden, 400 people, they were aged 70 to 88. Nobody was under 70. And half the people got a couple of capsules of Pharmanaud's Q10. It's called Bioquinone Q10 Gold, 100 milligram strength, one with breakfast, one with the evening meal. And they were given 200 microgram tablets of selenium. Half the people got the real Q10 and the mineral selenium. Half got the dummy ones. They followed these elderly people aged 70 to 88 for 5 years, and they were looking at dying of heart attacks and related heart problems, because unfortunately everybody dies, and one person in three dies of a heart problem. So if you could reduce that, that would be marvellous. And the results were marvellous. They were beyond, they were just unbelievable. Over the 5 years, these 200 people on the real Pharmanaud Q10 with the selenium compared to the ones on the dummy tablets, the death rate from a heart attack and or heart-related death dropped an unbelievable percent. 20% would be good. 30% would be good. 40%, 50%. It was 54%. If you take Pharmanaud Q10, and you take a tablet of selenium, then you can cut your chance as you get to 70 to 90 these people were 70 to 88. You can cut your chance of dying from a heart attack or heart-related problems by an unbelievable half, 54%. And also, there was a marker, a substance that every hospital in the country can look for in your blood. It's got a funny name, NT-proBNP. NT-proBNP. That's a long-worded name for a substance that when you get over 70, starts to appear in your blood. And what's it telling you? That your heart is finally getting old. You know, when you're 20, you've got strong legs, strong arms, you can swim, play tennis, you can flex your muscles. And as you get older and older, your muscles start to go flabby. Elderly women, people, when they shout house at bingo, bingo, and they flap their arms, they've got bingo wings. They've lost the muscle. They've lost the muscle. And similarly with the heart. The arm muscles, the leg muscles, then when you're very old, your bowels don't work as well, your bladder doesn't work as well. And the heart, in the end, as people get very old, and then unfortunately people die, as the heart gets very old, a substance appears in the blood that the hospital doctors can measure. And it's called that funny name, NT-proBNP. And in people over 70, it starts to appear because it rockets 20%. In this trial that I heard the result of in Sweden, with these elderly people taking the Q10 from Pharma Nord and the selenium tablet from Pharma Nord, this marker, NT-proBNP, indicative of an aging, damaged heart, did not go up at all. The mark did not go up at all. And I am in that group, 70 to 88. I'm 80. I have no muscle loss. I've been taking these products since I was 55. My mother on them did all the bookwork, VAT deduction cards, tax codes A and B, statutory sickness benefit, maternity grant, holiday entitlement. For a staff of 11, she did all that. I don't think she had any Alzheimer or dementia. I really believe, and I know the chemistry of selenium Q10. I know there's a new drug just come out, going to cost thousands, which will help to slow down early Alzheimer. But I've seen in my own family that by taking Pharma Nord Q10, one with each meal, and the tablet of selenium, you know, my mother did all this book work right up to her death at 92. My uncle, who fought Rommel in North Africa in the Second World War, and then went on to live to 99. And he didn't have Alzheimer or dementia. He had his own computer at 99. And he was ordering online the watch I'm wearing. He gave me as a thank you, because I kept him on the Pharma Nord product, Bioquinone Q10 Gold and BioSelenium Precise. So amazing results. Uncle 99, my mother 92, I'm 80, all taking these amazing products. We know the chemistry, how they work, but it is truly amazing. So coming back to this headline that I read out today, you think you're fat, but you think you're fit. It's a misleading myth. Now, there is a product that Pharma Nord make which helps you to lose weight. And it's so good and so safe. They've now got a dose for children, 5 years or older. One capsule a day. Adults take two a day. This helps to help you lose weight. It even helps you to avoid becoming diabetic because it reduces the sugar levels and the obesity. It's called bio-gluco control. The word gluco from the word glucose, sugar. And it's biologically controlling because it's made from a berry from the mountains of Chile. And this berry has a wonderful property. Any starch you eat, bread, potatoes, pizza, pasta, bagel, chapati, all starch becomes sugar. And then we store too much sugar as fat. So if you can stop the starch becoming sugar, you won't get the sugar to give you a fat bottom, a fat belly, a double chin. And the worst thing you can get, even more so than an alcoholic fatty liver disease, because when you drink a lot of alcohol, it's got sugar in it, and the sugar is stored as fat in the liver. And even if you don't drink alcohol, you've got a medical name. It's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And that's also causing horrendous problems with the liver, because the liver is the biggest organ in the body. It's got more jobs to do than any other organ. In fact, if you lose 80% of your liver, you can regrow a liver. You can't regrow a kidney or a heart or an ear or a nose or a finger, but we're designed, it's so important, the liver. But when you're obese, when you drink too much alcohol, you get alcoholic fatty liver disease. And if you're obese without alcohol, just through eating and eating and eating, cakes, chocolate, sweets, biscuits, jam, honey, marmalade, sweets, cakes. And children, you know, children who become obese when young have a 50% greater chance of having a stroke when they're not 50%, four times as much chance when they're 50 years old. When they're 50 years old, any kids who are obese at the moment, and you're giving the children and grandchildren this word treats. Treats isn't treats. It stands for T-R-E-A-T-S, terrible results, eating all that sugar. T-R-E-A-T-S, terrible results, eating all that sugar. I didn't read that anywhere. I made that up. I realized the word treats, we should all be wearing T-shirts with the headline, don't have treats, because it stands for terrible results, eating all that sugar. Because unfortunately, diabetics are more prone to blindness. One in four have heart trouble. 20% die younger from kidney problems. And there's a lot of amputations because the sugar damages the nerves and the nerves can't work the blood vessels, especially in the legs. And there's more gangrene in diabetes and amputations than any other illness. In Great Britain, one person every hour, somewhere, there's 8,000 hours in a year. So 8,000 people a year in Great Britain are having an amputation, either a toe, a foot, or a leg. And it's all down to being overweight, obese, having too much sugar. Because sugar combines with the retina, the screen of the eye, combines with the heart to damage the heart. Sugar combines with the kidney, so your kidneys can't filter your blood. You know, you've got 8 pints of blood. Think of a pint bottle of milk. Well, you've got 8 pints of blood in your body. And the kidneys have to filter it 20 times a day. And the kidneys are so important. Well, all the organs are important, but the sugar damages the kidneys. And that's why diabetics are more prone to diabetic kidney disease. It's the blindness. It's the kidney disease. It's the damage to the nerves, to the legs that can lead to gangrene. It's just terrible, the amount of food that we eat, in particular the sugar, but just eating too much food. We don't need, unless you're digging the road or chopping trees down, we do not need the amount of food that we eat. And the amount of food we're eating is not the right food. So many television programs, they're all on cooking and they're all showing you how to make cakes. And all you hear is so many ounces, so many grams of sugar going into the cake. And millions watch these programs every night and they're going out buying all this sugar to make all these sugary cakes and sugary treats, but it's wrong. And so these Pharmanaud products, the bioquinone Q10 Gold, the bioselenium, those two reducing. Hello?
I was just going to say, Dennis, that pretty much wraps up the whole sort of sequence. Expertly done.
Did you catch me, everything?
Everything has been duly caught, duly assigned, duly put together in its own wonderful way, a series of audio treats. Dennis, we will be back with you again in a couple of weeks' time, so hopefully we speak on the 25th of June.